Peace and greetings, family. Peace and greetings. We are back again with Rise of the Divine Feminine podcast. And today's guest is the one, the only, Lolo Lotus, the Pan-African princess. Welcome to our podcast, Lotus.
Peace. I'm so happy, so honored to be here.
We're so grateful to have you. We had a time getting Lotus situated, getting her together. So I'm so glad she's here because right now she's in Kenya. And you have had a surprise or a let me not call it a surprise visit, but a one in a lifetime kind of visit from a very special guest. So let's start with that. Who came to visit you in Kenya?
Yes. So my pops is here in Kenya, y'all. And it has been, it's still a little bit unreal. Both, you know, for me and for him, I'm like, you know, there's so many things in my life where I couldn't have imagined this moment, you know, from things in my own life to me being here, but especially for him being here. It's truly powerful. And then him touching the motherland for the first time, absolutely, you know, a place that has always been a dream. So even me, when it comes to so a couple things really important. My dad was actually imprisoned for about 30 years, wrongfully imprisoned. And just there's a lot around that. And so it's been many years of, you know, just not ever knowing if we would see him again and just fighting against so many different systems and bringing so many people on board in the fight, you know. And so it's always been just like this thing in the back of my mind of, you know, yeah, of just what it's like, the whole daddy father thing, you know, father daughter thing, and what that was going to look like for me for the rest of my life. And so last year, though, things aligned, you know, and by the grace of Allah, my father was released, you know, and he came home. So that was the biggest thing. And I still think that there's a lot of processing of that. You know, I go and I think that even with this time in my life, there's a lot of other things that have been happening personally. And for me to finally be able to be like, oh, my dad, my daddy, my dad, my dad. And, you know, to be baby girl for like the first time in my life ever. That's huge. And it's also playing a role in how I'm connecting to myself in this season of womanhood, how it's affecting relationships. I think that we all hear a lot about the different trauma, especially of women who grew up without a father. And there are so many conversations, narratives around it, books around it. You know, people talk about it all the time, but to live it and to experience how it affects you in real time is one thing, especially, I would say, especially throughout my movements in Africa and throughout my dealings in Africa, throughout dating and relationships in Africa, you know, fathers play a very significant role.
Right.
You know, here. And it's I don't know, it's huge. And so him being home is one thing, but then him coming here, whole another level. Even a lot of my inspiration around how I've connected to Africa over the years, especially over the last 13 years, were from seeds that he planted when I was little. You know, I grew up, my dad always was extremely Pan-African. I've always grown up with the mindset that we are African, but I was born in the U.S. I never had like a us and them mindset. And it was really hard to understand being in other cycles of diasporans or my friends, my Black American people. And like that, I never had that understanding. It always was like, we're African. And I remember, you know, even speaking in that way or spouting that narrative in different circles, and people weren't really jiving with that. But I was like, well, this is, you know, how I was programmed. And so fast forward to me as a, you know, an adult woman and making the pilgrimage and, you know, and moving and living and, you know, doing all the things on this side of the world. And it's like, I know it's from those seeds that were planted. So it's really full circle for him to be here, for us to be together, for me to be here doing what I'm doing. And yeah.
I love it. 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 I have 1,000 questions to kind of piggyback off of that question, I feel like maybe today we might only get to the father piece, because you made such a good point. Like, it's such a point to make about that masculine relationship, because Africa, while it is the motherland, there is a lot of that masculine representation here. You know, I talk about my journey to Gambia and how the first time I interacted with divine masculinity was in Gambia, because there were a series, there was an abundance of men there who were willing to help. You know, and willing to do. I didn't have to ask. I didn't have to beg. It was just understood. You're a woman. I'm a man. I'm going to help you. You know, you're not able to do what I do. You're not able to lift what I lift. Like, if I see you struggling, I'm going to come pick up the bag, pick up the kid, pick up you. Like, we see. Yes. I see you seeing me. I see you see. We see each other. So for me, I know that that is a big part of the repair. You know, this podcast season. Calvin, can you bring that green pillow from inside? If you don't know where it is, ask Isis and ask Kaishan. It's a flower pillow. I know that this season, well, because this season is really about that spiritual journey that we take when we leave. It's about furthering our journey outside of this place that we were born into. We were born in a land, in a place that held a lot of hostility for us before we even arrived, you know, that held a lot of, thank you, that held a lot of animosity for our sons, that basically felt some type of way. So for us, in repairing, a lot of that reparation and reclamation with the masculine is absolutely essential. Tell me a little bit more about why it's significant for you at this particular point in your life to have this relationship with the masculine. What was the relationship like before?
I think that, and I'll go so far as my capacity allows me, emotionally and energetically, but I would say, I mean, it's so much. Just being in the season where I am a lot more intentional about, you know, deciding on a life partner and moving forward, you know, with, you know, one of the potential people that I'm considering. And that, of course, being an African man, because that's who I've dated for the most part over the last, you know, 7 years, eight years. And, you know, certain expectations, ways of communicating, even certain practices, according to most cultures, when it comes to courting and marriage, the father plays a really big role. And I think that spiritually, there are so many things. This is a very deep question. So spiritually, it really is. So spiritually, I've always had a notion. I had a kind of a notion before that even though there was a part of me that reckoned with the idea of my father actually ever coming home, or if that, you know, being a reality, there was a part of me where I always knew I would never be married or settle down with anyone until my father was present. Mm-hmm. It was like something that just clicked. Mm-hmm. And when it actually happened last year, I knew the season that was happening. I knew how everything was aligning. Mm-hmm. And then not too long ago, I did a really deep medicine journey, mm-hmm. mushroom journey with my sister, mm-hmm. which was fucking crazy. Opened up all types of portals. Mm-hmm. But one of them was my gateway into spirituality was womb work.
Okay.
I went through some deep tragedy in 2018, lost a partner. He was the love of my life. You know, he transitioned. It was actually in Tanzania. I was living there at the time, and it like rocked my world, and it took me into some really deep places. Up until then, I was practicing Christianity for about 5 years up until that point as an adult. I was raised with a lot of influence, Christianity, different types of Christianity, and Islam. My father is Islamic, is Muslim, as well as all types of stuff. And so, but At that time, I had chosen Christianity on my own and had been practicing for about 5 years. And though I had a lot of questions and I was interested in a lot of stuff, Reiki, meditation, all of this, you know, in that environment, it was like, oh no, you know, that's demonic, that's devilish, like whatever, whatever. That partner, the one who transitioned, was the first person that I even started to explore these ideas with, or even kind of like felt, you know, safe enough to ask these questions. And we were very much on the same page about what we were feeling and thinking spiritually. I think had he continued to be here, we would both be in this direction, doing medicine work, healing folks. Like we definitely like has started to open up some stuff. And then I think when he transitioned, it was like, whatever there that was connecting me to any kind of limiting beliefs was gone. And I went, you know, first to a very dark phase, not wanting to be here every day, waking up, like literally wanting to die for a really long time. And then like January 3rd, 2019, went for this really powerful Reiki session with a sister in Nashville that changed my life, you know, opened me completely up. And one of the main takeaways from that cycle, from that session was that there was two. Paolo visited during the session, which was crazy, and gave me some messages about the work that I had to do here. That was the partner.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then, but then there was the acknowledgement of a lot of work that needs to be done in my womb. Mm-hmm. She was like, your womb is neglected. You need to do womb work. I had never heard that term. I was like, what you mean? Like, I was, womb work, never even heard. No one had said that. I was outside of washing my vagina. Like, I, you know, I was like, do what?
Right.
So that is when I took a deep dive into just that, from steaming to just like ancient knowledge and just really starting to learn about my yoni, the symbolism of it, that how it's truly the gateway to not just all, I mean, to us, every single part of us and who we are and what we do. It's the portal, and just to all creation, period. That was the first time where I started to probably tap into those ideas that, you know, the Black woman is God, you know, for real. Okay. Because I was like, what? You mean this is this? I was like, you mean this symbol means this? Yes. You mean the trachea and the throat reflects this? It was just like, what? How is nobody?
How do we not know this? How is this not knowledge from the get-go? How is this not in elementary school? Well, how did we miss this? All right, give thanks and praise. Let's continue.
It was deep. So that was probably maybe the first, that was the beginning. Womb work was the beginning, and that deep dive into a bunch of other stuff that led me to Black Lotus Wellness and what I'm doing now. And at that time, I had perceived that I had done, you know, throughout the time, I perceived that I have done significant womb work. And I was, you know, whatever, did this journey with my sister a couple months ago. And it confirmed a lot of things around me entering to this era where I get to be baby girl for the first time in my life, where I get to unpack and put down the burden of firstborn, of daughter, of woman, of all these things, of healer, of carrying the family. Like, it literally, the journey was crazy. We saw portals opening up in the sky in front of us, lightning striking down, storming. No storm was on the radar. It was, when I say this was like out of a fucking movie, it was crazy. But one of the things that it said, so I went through, and this was crazy for me, because so many women that I've sat with when in medicine have given birth. Like, it's a common thing so many times with women, you know, they'll go through the birthing process, mm-hmm. birthing themselves, releasing trauma, like literally heaving, pushing, going through birth. I did it in this journey, and my sister sat for me. And this is the sister who I've worked with for the last, you know, several years with her, you know, mental health and spirituality, who had attempted to, you know, transition herself up out of here several times, was unsuccessful, and has just come into a whole different place. So it was like such a full circle moment of, first of all, her holding space for me, but then, you know, and I'm talking about holding, when I was raging, and she just sitting there like, girl, she hold my hand like, just let it out. And I'm just like, I didn't know what was going on. And I'm just like, what is this? Because I mean, I've been there with her, like in the trenches. And so for her to like, it was crazy.
I love that.
But one of the things that it said there, it was, and it was like the whole journey was about permission. It was about me passing the baton of having to hold everything, her stepping into a place of holding space more for the family. It was about me being restored, everything that I've lost from not having a father, all the things, everything being restored to me, me getting all, back all those years, getting to be baby girl, and my womb being unblocked. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? Like, you know, and I think up until that point, again, when it came to marriage and truly settling down and life partner and all that, I had always had this notion that it has something to do with my dad. Like I wouldn't, it would never happen. Even when I would have like visions, it's like I would see me walking up an aisle or something, or see me doing stuff, and there'd be like a like a figure next to me that was like not clear or something. And I always had this like, someone's missing, something's missing. It's my dad, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but when it said also about the womb being unblocked and that being linked to me being like free and like being restored and, you know, being able to even hold that space for life or for conception or for creativity, it was huge. And I went through, like I said, I went through the birthing process. I was breathing. I mean, I was in there like something was coming out. Yeah. And at the end, it was like, your womb has been unblocked. And then hold on, I'm talking, when I say it was so specific that it was like, you know, you've been out here, you know, over these last couple of years, you know, doing whatever, taking chances. It was like, you might not even want to, it literally was like, the spirits was joking so hard. It was like, don't even rub an elbow with nobody. They was like, it's on. Like,
we're done. Yeah,
the switch is on. So they were like, death. Literally, it was.
I love like, that.
Because, you know, I'm the oldest. Child, I'm the oldest of six, and I got between my sisters, I got 19 nieces and nephews, so our family is very fertile. Wow. My mom got six kids. Wow. All my sisters, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, woo. And I got, man, and I have been, right, and so now I'm like,
it's time.
I'm locked in.
Yeah.
I'm not playing games.
It's time.
But, so saying all that to say, now it's like, I know it's significant for him to be here, for him to be even on the journey that he's on, because my time is coming.
Right.
And I think he's a very necessary part of this for me. And that's, you know, and so even with, you know, there's like a couple, one particular brother that I'm aligned with, you know, and he's Islamic, and it's such an interesting space. There's so many things that he says to me, you know, that really mirror what my father says. And there's such like, I don't know, there's some kind of connection even between them. I'm pretty sure that's the person I'm gonna end up marrying. Oh. But you know, it's a lot. And then when it comes to, what'd you say?
I said, that's so good to know. It's like, when you know, you just know. Like this is likely.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I do. I'm pretty sure. And it's because I'm so resistant. And then what makes me know more is because I'm so like, I'm just like a little bit resistant.
Well,
because I'm just like,
I want to back up, because what you're talking about, Lotus, mm-hmm. I want to be honest. There are so many women who have dealt with this category mm-hmm. that starts off with blockages caused from the father, that then hold space viscerally in the body, that then block or thwart or sabotage relationships with the masculine.
Yes.
That then lead to a sense of hopelessness, sometimes a sense of desperation, and sometimes sense of despair, because there's this recurring theme of, I'm never the first choice. They never choose me first. I'm tired of being someone's second choice, you know? And we see these same kind of sentiments being reinforced even in popular culture. You know, my daughter watches that show, Love Island, and there's young ladies on there who are clearly not a first choice, but who settle for being somebody's second or third choice in the name of just being loved, or in the name of just being partnered. And what I would love for you to explain is what gave you peace in in taking the time that you did to allow these things to unfold and to reveal itself and to basically guide you on this journey, you know, for partnership. What has brought you into that element of being at peace with it? Like, no, I, you know, yeah, my sisters have kids. No, I don't have any kids, you know, and I'm not out here in a rush trying to get pregnant just for the sake of having someone's kid. What brought you peace? What brought you that stability? And I'm going to transition. So I'm going to take my video off because it's raining. I'm just going to move.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. I'm here.
So a couple of things I want to say to this. I'm going to answer this, but I also want to talk about something significant, which you kind of hit on. And this is where I was going to go too, even with this whole, you know, my dad being here in Africa specifically, and most of my dating and potential, you know, like most of my romantic exploration being with African men, and what I've learned and how that's been different from what I experienced during the first 20 something years of my life growing up and dating mostly Black American men in the US, and how it's such a different thing, and how even what you said, my first experiences of the divine masculine were here in the continent, you know, between 2017, 2018 in Tanzania, and how it totally shifted things for me. And it really kind of set the standard for what I knew could be. It was like, it was a lot of grieving, first of all, about, you know, a lot of grieving for myself and for what I felt like I had missed and been taken away, and for what I could have been experiencing, for what I felt like I gave away, you know, like a lot of grieving, a lot of grieving, a lot of reckoning with that. And then starting the process of deconditioning around what relationships needed to look like. So, and then even with my dad, you know, there's a lot with him. Ciao. As we're talking about the blessing of this, you know, of him being home, him being here, and all the amazingness, it's a lot of work that needs to be done. You know, it's a lot of work. You know, he exists in a space of heavy, still toxic masculinity. And I'm using that term intentionally, not as a very casual, like trendy, like buzzword, toxic masculinity, but a very, you know, in a very intentional way. And are you still there? I'm sorry.
I'm here, sis.
Okay, cool. I just seen a little like fluttered and it went quiet. I was like, okay. So also like him even learning of how to be a father, at least to me, to a daughter of my caliber and of my standard and of my standing, how to be a father to a goddess, you know, to a queen, someone as powerful as me, but then also to a woman, period, like how to actually hold space for a baby girl, for a woman, for all the things. And like just those dynamics, like how he's supposed to be speaking, you know, what kind of, you know, how to help meet my needs, his expectations of me. And the, you know, and there's a lot within that, that we're relearning, and he, well, he's relearning or learning in the first place, but it's like, it's weird for me because I've now experienced that through men that I've dealt with from here. And I've seen that also as a byproduct from my friends and their fathers here on the continent. And so now I have this idea, this standard, this expectation, and this knowing of what your job is supposed to be. And so a lot of my communication with you or response to you is coming from this place of my expectations of what I need. Like, you're an African father, you know, when he is still, he has a very long way to go to really fulfill that. There are aspects of it that he naturally embodies coming up from the bush in Mississippi and being a Muslim. Like, he's more African than he knows, you know, or well, he thinks he's more African than I would say the average Black American father, you know. But it's still a lot of work there, and there's still like a little bit of disconnect. And so I think that has pushed me, and well, I have to be very mindful of that, pushing me to seek certain things from partners as he's going through this space, or even prior to him even being here, seeking certain things. So I wanted to put that out there and again, just acknowledge that I too, like you said, my first experiences with the divine masculine were here on the continent, and it has shaped a lot about my expectations, how I think, how I deal with men, even back home, and not just other romantic partners, but even men in my life, period. I hold a completely different space for men than I did prior. You know, coming up in the US, it was always like this, I don't know, this battle, this competition, this us and them, you know. And growing up in the US, there was still a lot more disconnect between Black women and Black men. And here, I really, you know, it has shifted to where I'm like, we're one, you are me. Like, we can't exist without each other. And we both have this responsibility to each other. And I want to hold space for you the way you hold space for me. It's not just a tit for tat and stuff. But again, that's because I've been treated the way I was supposed to, you know, and things like that. So shooting to the question that you just asked about, how have I made peace? So initially, when you were saying that, I was kind of laughing in my mind because I was like, well, I wouldn't say I exactly made peace, but I've just seen the alternative. I've seen the alternative, and I knew that wasn't for me. You know, I knew having multiple children with, you know, multiple guys, I knew being a baby mama wasn't it for me. I just knew that being around, I've seen my mom go through it with six children. I've seen all back to back, like not just seeing it, I was fully immersed in the trauma, in the overwhelm, in the grief. I've watched my nieces and nephews and where they've been. You know, I've seen the sister that I was just talking about, you know, try to take herself out of here multiple times, been right there. So I think that was, it was a natural response for me to be like, okay. It's my 15 minute. It was a natural response for me to be like, oh, I don't want no parts of that. So I'm gonna do whatever I need to do. And then also, you know, just like knowing and believing enough in the idea that what I wanted, what I desired, what I knew I deserve is there. You know, and again, it's not, I wouldn't say, I don't even know again if I would ever use the term made peace with it because it's hard, you know, it's hard. And it's not, there's so many wrestling and there's different phases that I went in the in-between, you know, I went in different phases too, where I was like, you know, whatever, but it's, girl, child, yeah. I don't want this phase now,
but we have to acknowledge that it's easier said than done, Lotus. Help, and I have to give you your flowers because it would have been a lot easier to become a struggling baby mama. To make popular culture references because they give us an opportunity to see these things in real time. But people are speculating that Ashanti, after having this 10-year relationship or whatever with Nelly, you know, is being made to be a single mother, although she's now married to this man, you know, with a lot of commentary about him saying, I'm not changing diapers. I'm not going to be his father till he's about 3 years old. Like, don't you hear your baby crying? Like, that's the energy. And it is a lot easier to just surrender to the status quo. It's a lot easier to surrender to what's already been accepted by society. Mm-hmm. But you make such a beautiful point when you say that I know how this is supposed to be and I know what I'm supposed to have. And so I'm not willing to accept something that I'm not supposed to have. That's not for me, you know? And so it is a lot easier said than done. So I have to give you your flowers for that because I'm not a single woman during this time, Ashanti. And it's been a long time since I have been a single woman. I'm the friend that's always perpetually married. I've been in long-term marriage. I'm that friend. I'm that sister. I'm that mother. I'm that auntie. I'm the wife of the crew. Always. I've never been, you know, single and without kids. Since I was a kid, I had a kid. So there's just a lot of gold and jewels that you're offering. I know you're offering to the woman who's listening right now, who has clarity, who knows that like this ain't it, but it's still fighting and it's still, she's still struggling. It's still a struggle to remain disciplined, to remain diligent, to remain focused. What would you say to her? What would you say to her? What would your advice be?
First of all, I love myself too goddamn much. I love myself. I love treating myself, taking care of myself. Like, it's really not that much space for like, I literally love myself that much. If it's anything, I'm still trying to, like I said, this is my baby girl season. Like, even, and that's kind of some of the resistance. Girl, that's kind of some of the resistance with the guy, because I know he ready to lock it in and get me pregnant. I'm like, sir, I want to be locked in, but like, can we do travel a little bit? Can we do some things? Because I'm not, you know, I know he's like, this is the time. He's, you know, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm ready to be, you know, in a very committed, beautiful, exciting partnership, but I'm not quite ready, you know, for motherhood. And so I think that's an important thing, you know, that whole conversation about motherhood and what that's supposed to be and the expectation of that for folks and people being okay with standing in that truth, which especially with my African friends, you know, that is a conversation that is like, folks, just is the programming is deep. It's like, these are the steps. You do this, you do this, you do this, you do this. And I'm just like, yeah, that's not, you know, for me, I think that being okay with knowing that what you choose is for you, like having, being committed to choosing what is for you, not for anyone else or anything else, simply about what feels good for you.
Period.
And getting, and also choosing to get the most pleasure and most bliss out of life possible. And for me, pleasure and bliss does not involve little folks running around crying loud, doing stuff. That is not anywhere near pleasure and bliss for me personally. Mm-hmm. You know, and until I've gotten, another thing that was big for me in this journey too was, you know, growing up and experiencing a lot of poverty, and even in young adulthood, not having any kind of money management skills or anything like that, and being in these perpetual cycles. And I swore that I would never bring a child into that, nor would I ever want to experience that. And so if I can't afford a cook, a cleaner, extra nanny, the type of, if I can't do all of that first, if I don't have a good 20, 30 G's already put up for the child, we want to have a baby together, we need to start putting money in the pot before the child comes. Like, I'm not doing it. I'm not. Yeah. So that, those were things that I just were hard stops for me.
Yeah.
Helped me to get to this point. And then my journey. So with the work that I do, it's just been the calling over my life. It's plenty. Hold on now. I've had, now I ain't gonna say, you see, you again, you saying of being at peace, being disciplined. I've had a spiritual calling over my life. That's what's protecting me. I've been covered because now it's so many times. It's been some times I call my girlfriend like, girl, might be a but it ain't never happened, you know, and I'm grateful. I'm so grateful. Right. But I do know a lot of the work that I have, you know, through so many journeys, through so many channelings, readings, traveling through other dimensions, tapping in with ancestors, guides, going to these countries, sitting with these masters. I know the work that I came here to do too. Yeah. And that has also been a huge part of what is happening in my romantic life. Mm-hmm. I was blessed to have a partner over the last couple of years, which you have known and met, you know, in Tanzania, who's the first person who I've ever met who was equally yoked spiritually and could hold space for me. And that was gold. Now, was he the perfect person to be a partner or romantic partner or a husband and to hold space for me in this physical realm? Not so much. But spiritually, especially for the work that I have been doing over these years, he was exactly what I needed and more. And no one has been able to be that. And so that's been another thing, you know, being who I am personally, is, you know, having multiple partners who fill different roles for me.
Right.
You know, and so, again, I think that I'm transitioning into a season where it is time to narrow it down and go ahead and lock in. I know that's coming. Mm-hmm. I'm not rushing it. I'm letting it happen, you know, but the path has not been easy. It's not always peaceful. It's, I'm not extremely disciplined, but I'm committed to my overall spiritual purpose. And I'm committed to doing what's best for me, you know.
Lotus, let me ask you this, because we jumped right into things. You didn't even make an introduction. We got to circle back around so you can actually introduce yourself because she might be listening and it's already like 45 minutes in and she don't even know who this woman, Hapo. Okay. So give us your introduction and please make sure you include in your introduction, keep it short, because I do have one more question or two more questions I want to ask you before I know you have to go. But please include the places that you've traveled to, because this season is really about finding oneself outside of the West.
Hey. I go by Lo. Some people know me as Lolo or Lotus. Amina, Brittany, you might know me depending on where you met me in my life. You might know me as several different names, okay? I am the Pan-African princess. You know, I be in these African streets, north, south, east, and west, as well as, you know, the Americas, the Asias, all of them, not the Europes, not yet. That's not really my jam. But I be in some places. I don't mean the Europe. But you know, I am a it's not for me. But I am, you know, I'm an alchemist, I'm a guide, I'm a space holder for folks in many different capacities. I am a time traveler, a dimension traveler. I be in the ethers and all the different places. A lot of people know me for my work with psychedelics, you know, especially mushrooms and psilocybin. I've been working with mushrooms personally for about 24 years. I'm aging myself a little bit, but I started really young. Yeah, I tapped in when I was about 14.
Wow.
And, you know, it was in my early 20s, though, where, you know, I really had my first ego death or awakening where I was like, oh, shoot, you know, some things have to shift. It was then where I was able to see like the past, present, and future, and a lot of things started to come together. Couple that with a lot of interest in brain disorders and psychology, you know, coming up in a very traumatic environment and dealing with, you know, death, grief, traumas, abuses at a young age, and being around a lot of other children and young folks who had dealt with these type of things. I became very interested in just kind of how to heal oneself, even before I really knew what that meant. You said what?
Where are you from? You didn't big up 404.
So I grew up between Chicago and I didn't. I'm not from there. So I've been based in Atlanta. When I'm in the U.S., I've been based in Atlanta for the last 6 years. Yes, but I actually grew up in the Midwest, between Racine and Milwaukee, or between Milwaukee and Chicago, a little city up there. And from there, I've traveled around. I lived on the East Coast for a bit, Virginia. I lived in Tennessee, Tanzania. I spent some time just kind of being nomadic and traveling, but since 2019, my U.S. base is Atlanta.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, nice. And so I wanted you to just tell
that's
us
it. That's what I'm doing.
About your Asian journey. Where have you been in Asia? Because I think you're our first guest who's been throughout Asia.
Ooh, okay. So I spent time in Bali, Indonesia, Singapore, Japan, and Korea. Pretty shorter trips in Korea and Singapore. The most time in Bali, Indonesia. I spent almost 4 months there in 2023. It is absolutely amazing. Still connected to so many dope folks. I came during a time where there was a very active portal over there. I feel like it's always an active portal, especially around Ubud. But during that time when I was there, it was very specific people who were drawn and that I connected with. Yeah, a lot of mastery, a lot of folks who are masters in different areas, deep types of work, let's say that, and just knowledge and wisdom. And so I was really excited to be there and got to connect with some local traditional healers, which they call Balians. Okay. And get some work done and open up some things and just kind of like receive some knowledge. Japan was also really dope. I happened to be with someone who I also met in Indonesia who had been in Asia, a really dope Black man from the Bay who'd been in Asia for over 20 years.
Wow.
And so him and his wife, who's Japanese, led me for part of my trip in Japan. And we were up in the mountains, like meditating with some monks. And it was like Japan was tapped in. Yeah. Kyoto. Let me say this. You know, Tokyo is like, whatever. People be like, oh, Tokyo, for me, honestly, was a bit trash. I will give it another chance. But it was just way too much. It was just too much going on. It was dirty. It was loud. It was traffic. I was just like, ooh, what is this? I think it's cool if you want to go for like the little Instagram stuff. But Kyoto is tea. Kyoto is that girl. Like Kyoto, okay. You like, I was it was so spiritually sound. So a couple things, especially in the work that I do, working a lot on the other side, you know, working a lot, being very open and like attuned to the voices and frequencies of those who've transitioned,
right?
You know, working in the death realm.
Right.
With that, traveling to places is something that I usually notice right away, like what the chatter is like, what the activity is like, what am I feeling? Asia in general was probably in like some of the, like I could breathe there, like versus here. When I'm on the continent, it's heavy. It's very heavy. There's so much work still to be done. It's heavy. It's a lot, right? And I've learned how to deal with that. And I've done a lot of work here on behalf of, you know, things that need to be done on behalf of ancestral lines. Asia completely did. Indonesia, first of all, it was like they were having a party every day.
Wow.
Like they are so well loved and taken care of. Oh, yeah. In Indonesia, and Bali specifically, they're extremely spiritual and they practice a certain type of Hinduism, Balinese Hinduism, where they're like, they give offerings every day, not even just every day, but in every place. You're walking down a sidewalk, you see there's like these little things that they make with rice paper. That's their offerings. You're walking down the sidewalk, you see them all through everywhere you go in a car. You might be riding with someone in a car and they were like, oh, I just bought this car, I had to make offering for it. So they're riding with the offering in the car, like they, and the spirits eat it up. Like they are so well fed, nourished, and they're like excited, they're happy, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Japan, it's like they're so calm. They're just like at peace.
Yeah.
And it was just very noticeable. And so I love Asia. Between Africa and Asia, that's really where I want to be spending most of my time.
I know. I see.
That's it, girl.
I see. As a matter of fact, I had a whole list and I thought that's where we were going. I see that it's going to be on reserve for another conversation, but I had a whole list about, you know, your spiritual practice, because I know you're not necessarily adherent to any of these monotheistic religions, and that you vibrate with an Asiatic type of associated, you know, spiritual practice.
For
and
sure.
So I would love to hear about how that ties into Pan-Africanism. We still have to talk about psilocybin, because I also have led so many journeys with psilocybin and see it as such a very valuable and useful tool as we heal.
Sure.
But the big thing that you mentioned at the end that we really have to explore when we can connect again is your work as an emerging death doula, because that's such a it's such a coveted field. You know, a death doula these days is what a doula was 15 years ago. It was such a new area for us, and we really didn't know enough about it, but we really had to learn about it quickly in order to save our sisters, save our mothers, save ourselves. So now, you know, this death doula place and learning how to help people transition, it's such a valuable piece. And I know that there's so many questions that people will have about what it means, but if you could wrap this in a nice bow, and I really hate that I'm doing this to you. This is so bad of me.
No.
I'm going to spank myself later. Later on, I'm going to tap myself on the butt on the podcast behalf. On behalf of the podcast, I'm going to give myself a little tap. But I just want to ask you one question, and we'll put a bow on it for now. We'll unwrap this bow later next time we have a conversation. I want to ask you, what does home mean to you now?
I wish we would have finished with death. That's what I thought we were going to do, but let's finish with home, because death is it. But okay, we'll come back to that.
Don't you have somewhere to go, Miss Lady?
I do.
Okay, then.
home for me. Yeah, to be honest, it's that's probably the most, home and time are probably the biggest undefined spaces in my life. I grew up for a good majority of my childhood in foster care. and lived in so many different homes most of my life. And then even through adulthood in the US, moved, lived in different houses back and forth. Now I've traveled. I'm in these places. I have stuff right now with people in Ghana. I got stuff in Tanzania. I got clothes, stuff in Atlanta. I got stuff here. Like I got clothes, things, tea sets, instruments all scattered all over. I left stuff in Indonesia and been there 2 years. So honestly, it's either everywhere or nowhere. But I feel like that is what this season is about for me. I do. I feel like that is what the season is about. I think it is. Home is for me is more about like more than anything like a sense of wholeness, and I think I'm kind of completing that for myself, you know. So maybe it's my own body, it's within my own self. I think I've mastered the art of creating home wherever I go, but also like never, ever, ever, ever really ever feeling completely settled anywhere, knowing that there's always like this movement or I'm about to move, I just moved, like I don't know. So that is, yeah, it's. When we come back, I might have a more definitive answer, but
By
that's
the
where I'm
time
at.
we come back, there will be 100 other questions. Okay. We won't make it back to that. Okay. Because I have this, you see this is a whole list. You see all this is a list. Okay. It's a list. It's a list. It's a list. We didn't get to none of this. We didn't get to none of this. So, but we got to exactly what we needed to get to for today.
Say.
And this is a really good opener. I know that even though you and I we connected, I want to say maybe 3 years ago, this is the most I've learned about you in a one-on-one setting. I mean, I've seen other things that you've done, videos that you've done, even I think you did a conference maybe 2 years ago, and I watched some clips from that, but you weren't talking about this type of stuff. So there's so many different layers to us. And these layers bloom, they blossom, they spread as we spread wings and travel throughout the whole world. And one of the things that I love that you acknowledge is how you've created home everywhere. And what that does for me is it solidifies what I teach when I teach about the indigenous woman. As the indigenous woman, you are an indigenous mother. You have birthed everyone. So of course you're at home everywhere you go. Of course, we're supposed to be at home everywhere we go, because everywhere we go, there we are. Everywhere I go, there I am. Like I'm not in any, there's no piece of this earth that's foreign to me as a indigenous woman. So I love that you have reiterated that lesson without iterating the lesson. Another thing that you said that I find so valuable that I need to put the spotlight on it is the power and the essence of loving yourself, and how the desperation and the outside factors and all these other things that get people caught up, those things can kind of quiet down when there is this self-love, when there is this relationship with thine self and all things knowing, know thyself, you know, being a master of self. All those things are things that make it really hard to sacrifice yourself for a stranger, sacrifice yourself for possibility, sacrifice yourself for something that you created in your imagination. So, and these are things that I teach when I teach the compassion course. I have a signature course, the compassion course. I've been teaching it for about 6 years. And the compassion course is literally about that baby girl era. Like it's the concept that Black women have been bamboozled in thinking that we were supposed to be the world's workhorses when we were actually the world's mothers. We were the world's princesses, the world's queens, the world's first queens were Black women. So a lot of our reclamation is a reclaiming of love, a reclaiming of softness, a reclaiming of centeredness. Instead of this decentering men movement, maybe it should just be a center thine self movement. Instead of not doing something, let's talk about what we need to do. And what we need to do is just center ourselves. And if we centered ourselves, we wouldn't have to worry about somebody's nappy-headed Tyrone. Okay, we wouldn't have to worry about the concept of having a dream that somebody else had, but that may not fit with what truly works for self. It just needs to work for me. It doesn't matter what everybody else feels, thinks, and wants. So I really, really appreciate you being honest about these things, because these are real life situations. We could talk about the spiritual journey, and I do know that people get caught up talking about the spiritual journey, and it sounds so it's mystical, and it's, you know, it's big, and it's out there, and your chakras, and okay, baby, let's bring it to life. Okay, let's bring it to where we at.
No, real life.
And in real life, okay, the reason why things are not going with your relationships, friendships, jobs, environment, situations, all those things are because you're out of alignment. And when you get in accordance with the spiritual journey, that's why we stress it. When you get in accordance with the spiritual journey, you learn to release things that don't serve you. You release all the aspects that have been placed on you that were never yours to carry in the first place. So I know that we have another burgeoning conversation on the horizon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we're going to have to do a part two soon, because I would like to make sure that in this season, everybody gets everything that they need. But if not, we'll just have to go into season six. Anyhow, sis, I'm going to let you go. I wanted to tell you thank you for letting us be with you on this journey to your baby girl era. We don't call it the baby girl era. Thank you for showing us the significance of the masculine and how the masculine has paved the way for your feminine to be able to relax and for your feminine to now be able to untangle and choose what it wants. Thank you for allowing us to see that and be with you in that, because it's a big deal, and it's something that many magical women of this divine forest can relate to. They've been there, they understand, they know it, they've lived it firsthand, and it's beautiful to see this come full circle. It's beautiful to see it come full circle. So thank you for allowing us to be on the journey with you today, Lotus. Thank you.
You're welcome. Give thanks. And yeah, thank you for holding this space. And this is a very special space that you're holding. And I know a lot of us are going to be impacted, going to be given a lot of life from this. And I'm very honored to be able to share. I'm looking forward to part two.
Woohoo!
And yeah.
And then let us know, let them know. It's going to be in the caption, but let them know the best way to contact you or the best way to reach you. What's the best way?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And definitely reach out on the gram. If you have Instagram, you can reach out on the gram at lo dot in motion. That's InMotion, low in motion. You can also find me at blacklotuswellness.com. The A is a V, so it's BLVCK, lotuswellness.com. Also that Instagram. Yeah, and I really look forward to connecting. If anything that I said spoke to you specifically or resonated with you at all, please do reach out. So I'm all over. I'm currently based in Kenya, but I will be moving around a lot this year. And yeah, definitely looking to tap in.
Are you enjoying this episode? If so, head over to freethefeminine.com to take the spiritual evolution quiz. Find out which level of evolution in your spiritual journey you're on right now. See you over at freethefeminine.com.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Ashe. Yes. Ashe. Ashe.
Big Ashe.
Right.
Big Ashe.
Heavy on the Ashe. All right, sis. So we'll see you hopefully this same season, and I will list your contact information in the caption. And for those of you who are listening currently in this season five, don't forget to register for Lionsgate, our Lionsgate workshop. Hopefully Lotus will be able to join us for that Lionsgate workshop. We're so excited about it. We're using that portal opening, that vortex, to dive even deeper and to take it to another level. So you can register for that Lionsgate workshop on our website, which is freethefeminine.com. One word, freethefeminine.com. All right. This is Goddess Queen Jamila, Rise of the Divine Feminine podcast. And I will see you next episode. Peace.